Dogs Earth Explorers, welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become if you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Did you know you have existed for many thousands of years? The thought of reincarnation escapes most people, as it did me until I read this book. Your Never-Ending Life is the first in the Universal Learning Series from Sandy Andrew. Search your higher mind, find your soulmate, and know that you are never alone in this world. The treasures of the eternities are yours, and your first step is to read the book. Click the banner for Your Never-Ending Life by Sandy Andrew at X Squared Radio and order the book today. The foundations of religion and science were used to restore knowledge lost for over 6,000 years in our first book. The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 2, called 2012 and the Harvest of the End Times, brings us vital knowledge for the race of mankind. Have the Watchers returned? What did the Aztecs mean by their ancient predictions for the year 2012? Why is Earth changing so rapidly now before our very eyes? Who were the Shining Ones who lived on the Earth and worked with mankind as they recovered from cataclysms? Who are we? Where did we come from? If you could find a book that answers just one of these questions, you'd buy it. Now there are two in the series that is sweeping the world with its message. Go to ArkOfMillionsOfYears.com and get your autographed copy today. Now, also available in full audio version. Welcome, Earth Explorers, to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. In here, the results are always positive. We'll try to keep it that way. The solar wind is a very mild 385.6 kilometers per second. Sunspot 944 is still quite visible, but it poses no threat for solar flares. There is no coronal hole facing Earth at the moment. The first total lunar eclipse since the publishing of The Ark of Millions of Years occurred last night. Last time this occurred, there was a grand sextile planetary alignment where six planets formed a Merkaba, six-pointed star around the Earth. There was a full lunar eclipse in the middle of that. Last time that occurred with a full lunar eclipse, it heralded the birth of King Solomon. It was said at that time that when it occurred again in the year 2004, the keys to understanding the creation of the earth would be restored. You can get your copy at arcofmillionsofyears.com. By the way, we're going to run a special on that this month. Whatever copy you buy, soft or hard, of Volume 1 or Volume 2 of The Ark of Millions of Years, you will receive the audio version of that for free. So you can have something on your library shelf and something in which you can write notes and make reference to, but if you're not a very big reader, don't worry about it. I read it for you. Just burn it to a CD, put it in an MP3 player, and you can take the book with you with me reading it to you. Hey, Wild Hogs is the number one movie this weekend. I recommend it. It's a good movie for my age class motorcycle rider. It's kind of a fun movie. But the movie I really recommend for you and your family is Astronaut Farmer. The only thing I can say about that movie is everyone has their rocket ship. I recommend you take your kids and go see that movie. Last week we had... Mr. McDonald on the program. I got quite a bit of email about that show. I apologize to Crystal for the way her call was handled. So if you're listening tonight, please accept my apology and please keep on calling. Listeners like you are far too valuable to me to be mishandled. I would also like to welcome a new 14-year-old listener, Gary, to the top of the group of archive listeners. Listen, if you are not of legal age to buy an archive online, to buy a passcode, please write me. We're only talking, maybe $1.67 a month for a year's subscription. I can take care of that for you. I believe everything we do will eventually affect the universe, and I can think of no better way to affect it than to provide a way for your minds to access some of these great guests. So if you're 14 or 15 years old and you're interested in the paranormal, you're interested in UFOs or planetary exploration or Earth exploration, you don't have to wait till you're 18 to gain access to the archives. I'll give it to you for free. I believe that the payback will be well worth it. The least I can do is invest $1.67 a month in your future. And there's a new article out. Those of you that have been following the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition and have heard the consternations of the science community over this wild idea that the Earth might be hollow. A seismologist at Washington University in St. Louis has made the first 3D model of seismic wave damping diminishing deep in the Earth's mantle and has revealed the existence of an underground water reservoir, at least the volume of the Arctic Ocean. It is the first evidence for water existing in the Earth's deep mantle. Michael E. Weissession, PhD, Washington University Professor of Earth and Planetary Sciences in Arts and Sciences, working with former graduate student Jesse Lawrence, now at the University of California, San Diego, analyzed 80,000 shear waves from more than 600,000 seismograms and found a large area in Earth's lower mantle beneath eastern Asia where water is damping out or attenuating seismic waves from earthquakes. The traditional method seismologists use to image the Earth below us is to measure the speed of seismic waves. This will provide a sort of CAT scan, an MRI, if you will, of the Earth's core and mantle. Using wave speeds alone is a problem, however, because they cannot distinguish between temperature and composition variations. The research is described in a forthcoming monograph, Earth's Deep Water Cycle, which is in press to be published by the American Geophysical Union, analyzing damped out waves. An increasingly popular method, which Weissession used, is to analyze the way waves damp out from their source. If you take a hammer and pound it hard on a desk, waves will go from the source to the end of the table with the mass of the table lessening or attenuating the power of the waves. That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Well, a picture near the striking point might topple, but a stapler 2 feet away might not even budge. Attenuation data tell seismologists how stiff a region is, which is a function of how hot it is and how much water it contains. Looking at the seismic wave speeds and attenuation at the same time can tell whether an anomaly is due to temperature or water. In analyzing the data, Y-Session first saw large patterns associated with known areas where the ocean floor is sinking down into the earth. Between Asia, the fallen Pacific, sea floor piles up at the base of the mantle. Right above that, he observed an incredibly high attenuating region that is both very damping and slightly slow, he says. Water slows the speed of waves a little. Lots of damping and a little slowing match the predictions for water very well. Previous predictions, I should let you know, have been that the Earth is, quite solid. Calculated that a cold ocean slab sinking into the earth at 14,000 kilometers beneath the surface would release water in the rock that would escape the rock and rise up to a region above it. But this was never previously observed. No one had ever been there. That is exactly what we show here. The exact depth and high attenuation amounts right above it, Y-Session said. I call it the Beijing anomaly. Water inside the rock goes down with the sinking slab, and it is quite cold, but it heats up the deeper it goes, and the rock eventually becomes unstable and loses its water. The water then rises up into the overlying regions. Well, that is very interesting. If you combine the volume of this anomaly with the fact that the rock can hold up to about 0.1% of water, that works out to be about an Arctic Ocean's worth of water. In recent years, seismologists have become excited at the possibility of a feature like the Beijing anomaly. The availability of vast amounts of digital seismograms made possible the discovery by Y-Session and Lawrence, who wrote many thousands of lines of computer code to do the analysis. Water is like a lubricant, constantly oiling the machine of mantle convection, which then drives plate tectonics and causes the continents to move about Earth's surface, Y-Session said. Now, he has never been to the North Pole region either, and I have written Dr. Y-Session, and I have invited him to come on to the North Pole Inner Earth expedition. We'll see what his answer is. You have heard us talk here at X Squared Radio about the beginning of the Spirit Race. Well, there are more details coming on March 25th. You don't want to miss that program. In January, we had Ken Payne on. Then in February, we had Marine St. Germain. This month, on the 25th of March, we will unlock the secret for you. You've heard about the secret. You've been, I'm sure, exposed to one of the most clever marketing plans in the history of self-help books called The Secret. Rhonda Byrne has compiled information that, of course, is no secret, but the title of the book is The Secret, about the laws of attraction. And this kind of thing is exciting people. And we're glad for it, because this kind of subject really, really needs this kind of marketing. It needs this kind of exposure. And it is quite a simple message. What we're trying to do here on X Squared Radio is to make sure that you finally have the tools you need to manifest your dreams into reality. Of course, that means you're going to have to start dreaming big. Really big. We'll tell you more about it in upcoming programs. Stay tuned. This month. Next week, March 11th, we will have the show many of you have been waiting for. Mark Pinkham, author of the fabulous book Guardians of the Holy Grail, will be on the program. I highly recommend the book. But the interview we are going to have together will be astounding. If you thought you knew anything about Freemasonry or the founding roots of this country, then you need to listen to this program. Now, this program may hold the keys to why we are at war right now. Also in the news, the 43rd Annual Conference of Anomalous Phenomenon will be at the American Visionary Art Museum in Baltimore from 9:30 a.m. until 6 p.m. on March 7th. That's 3 days from now. That night is a viewing also of Fast Walkers, co-produced by Robert D. Miles, at DeSalle College Theater in Toronto. So make sure to contact Victor Vigiani or email us at info@x2-radio.com, and we'll make sure you get the information you need for either one of those. This week we have Rob Simone on the program. Unfortunately, he's listening in his car right now, stuck in traffic in Los Angeles. He just now informed me that he will be at his home and able to receive our call at 4 o'clock Pacific time. That's about 40 minutes from now. So we'll hang loose while Rob is getting himself ready to come on. Those of you that are not familiar with the film Fast Walkers, if you've only seen or heard some news about it, you definitely do not want to miss this interview. We're gonna expose you to a website and to some excellent inside information about the film, about the subject of UFOs and UFO research and UFO disclosure, things you have never heard before. You're going to hear them first right here on X Squared Radio. I want to tell you a little bit about some research that I have been doing and will be revealing at a workshop in July at Mount Shasta on July 9th. If you want to know more about it, you need to go to x2-radio.com and click on the banner that says ETs. It is put on by Shalimar Productions at Mount Shasta. I guarantee you, if you make it to this, not only can you afford it, you can afford the drive and you can definitely afford the workshop and the exposure. You're definitely going to be enlightened by this information. I'm just going to give you a little bit of preview of that right now while I wait for Rob to come around. I'm getting a lot of AIM messages right now. Those of you that want to access me quickly during the program can go to AOL Instant Messenger, as is noted on the front cover of X Squared Radio's website. You can reach me using the username Vision Officer. We are very soon going to start using the chat room at BBS Radio. There is a fast chat at bbsradio.com. We'll give you the instructions how to do that. You can find that at bbsradio.com, and you'll be able to flash us messages if you're too shy to come on the phone. We will open the phone lines at 4 o'clock Pacific time if you want to make those calls and you're not at the computer but at a radio and have your cell phone handy. Here are the numbers. You can call toll-free at 4 o'clock anywhere in the U.S. at 877-876-5227. I know I flashed through those a little quickly last week. I apologize. Again, that's 877-876-5227. Anywhere in Canada, toll-free. We have not forgotten about you in the northern part of America. 888-810-8322. And anywhere else on planet, off planet, inside the planet, if you can reach a tower, you can get through to X Squared Radio at 530-876-3222. That goes for Europe, New Zealand, Australia, all my friends in the UK. I understand Sunday at this time slot in the UK, X Squared Radio is the number one paranormal radio program as it is rebroadcast there. We appreciate that. All right, a little bit about some research into physics. One of the things that we have discovered is that energy can become entangled. What do I mean by that? You know that a Nobel Prize was won talking about the spin relationship of particles as they pass from being a wave into a particle. We don't really understand the dynamics of that. We know that if we shine a photon through a slit, that it makes a wave pattern on a screen. If we stop the particle to check its spin before it goes through that slit, it changes back into a particle, and it only makes one line on the screen instead of multiple lines like a wave would. We don't really know why that happens. That's remarkable enough. What's even more remarkable is if we take two particles off of ions that appear to be entangled. That is to say, these two particles are sort of married to one another, for lack of a better word. We send the two particles forth, we separate them, and we change the spin on one particle. Guess what happens to the other particle? That's right. Its spin changes. And it doesn't change at the speed of light. It changes instantaneously. In 1999, two ions were separated by 11 kilometers. Now, it's one thing to take two particles off of a large ionized molecule or a large ionized atom, like, say, beryllium or gold, and separate them by a few centimeters. That is an infinite distance, relatively speaking, on an atomic scale. But when you separate them by 11 kilometers, and then you reverse the spin electromagnetically on one particle, and instantaneously, the other particle, 11 kilometers away, reverses spin as well. Believe me, that turns some heads. That turns some real heads. Well, right now, headed out into space, are six beryllium ions, which are entangled with mating ions here on Earth. I don't know how far away those ions are now. I can't get an update from the science team. But the idea is anything that affects those ions out in space is going to change the spin of the mating ions or the entangled ions here on Earth instantaneously. I don't know if you can see the same thing that I see here, but we're talking about a beryllium ion modem. We're talking about a binary state, left spin, right spin, plus a half, minus a half, however you want to talk about it. It's a go, no go kind of change, a switch, as you will. So now what you have is the ability to send binary information, same as you're looking at on your computer screen, same as you're listening to on your cell phone, same as you're doing when you play those video games, all binary information. Now we have the ability to transfer binary information, 11 kilometers or 11 parsecs, instantaneously between two spots. That's going to change everything, my friends. The way remote probes send their information from Mars back to Earth, the way we explore outside our solar system, even outside our galaxy, is going to change forever as soon as they catch up to this idea. Well, now it has other implications, other very powerful scientific and human implications. I'm going to try to keep this as generic as I can, maybe as little high science as I can, so that all of you can understand this. But I want you to get the impact of what this research means. Two ions entangled with one another through an unseen relationship, almost an ununderstandable relationship, mean great things. Because we as human beings, as solid, three-dimensional human beings, I'm not talking about the spiritual part of us. I'm not talking about the part that makes up your moods and your desires and your loves and your relationships. I'm talking about the peas and carrots that you eat. I'm talking about the grass that feeds on the minerals and the sunshine that the cow eats, that turns into beef, that turns into hamburger, that you consume, that turns into protein that makes your muscles, calcium that makes up your bones and your nervous system. I'm talking about those ions, the solid stuff. You are made up of matter that is entangled with other matter in the universe. Energy that comes from our sun energy that comes from supernovas, long since died, high-powered energy that forms highly organized, heavy atoms that make up things well beyond iron, compounds, and subatomic particles are formed by this high-powered energy. They are infused with it. They are homogenized by it. And they are entangled with it. So when we say that we are somehow entangled with another person here on this planet, that's quite remarkable. Then whatever happens to them happens to us. Whatever they feel, we feel. Whatever they believe, we believe. We see this in identical twins, at least for the first part of their lives, until every single cell in their body is changed out about every 14 years. As old ones die off and new ones are replaced, the odds of them being replaced exactly the same with exactly the same matter are astronomical. Now let's take it the next step. If you are entangled with energy, and thus particles, and thus food, and thus the solids that make up your mortal body here, then you are also entangled with other energy, and other particles, and other matter in other parts of the universe. Because you see, when a supernova explodes, it doesn't just explode in the direction of little tiny Earth way out here on a distant arm orbiting a small main sequence star, third planet from the sun. It exposes all the planets, all the asteroids, all the stars, all the galaxies in the universe. And that energy entangles other energy, other subatomic particles, other atoms, other molecules. And those things that are affected out there also affect matter here. Even more importantly for us, even more importantly for this program, are the way you affect the universe. The things you do to yourself, for yourself, by yourself, of yourself, do affect the universe. Not just by the sound of your voice, not just by the action of your hands, whether you swing a hammer or press a computer key or wield a pencil or a bow across a violin. No, the effects you have reach further than that because they involve your thoughts. They involve your feelings. They involve your beliefs, your desires, and your loves. That's true. It goes out. It goes out to the universe. And it affects the universe. You are affecting the universe with your thoughts. Now, how does this relate to what you're doing now in your life? How does this relate with your actions, your desires, or your inaction? Have you stopped doing things? Have you stopped believing things? Have you stopped loving? Have you stopped forgiving? Have you stopped accepting others for who they are and seeing in them what they can become? All of these things affect the universe because you are using the matter that is inside of you that makes up your mortal body. And you may be affecting the matter in those that are close to you, in your family or in your relationships, where you work, who you love, who you dislike. You are affecting the matter in them as well. And that means you are affecting the universe through them. So as you are sitting at your computer now on Monday morning listening to this archive, or if you're driving in your car across the frosty desert, or listening in your semi-truck as you're driving across country carrying goods from one place to another, I get emails from all of you. It's quite moving. I want to let you know that you do affect the universe. No matter how ignominious you think you are, no matter what little tiny piece you play in the cog or machine of which you think you are a part, You are affecting the universe, and you are important, more important than you can imagine. Now that you're aware that you can and do affect the universe with your desires, with your thoughts, and with your love, even with your dislikes and your hatreds, take more care. Take a little more thought. Put a little more value into what you say to one another and how you love one another. And when next time you take on a science, take it on with that in mind. The next thing you learn, the next thing you teach, if you're a teacher or a professor or a writer or a lecturer, or you give regular workshops on your own, keep that in mind, that the value that you are putting out with your mind, and thus that turns into possibly words out of your mouth or out of your fingers in the words of written or sung information, take more care with what you do, because these effects are far-reaching. I have people tell me all the time, well, you know, Brooks, bad things just happen to me. I don't know why. I don't have any control over any of these things. I'm not in control of a company that goes bankrupt that owes me money. I'm not in control of an accountant that goes to jail. I'm not in control of my automobile breaking down in the middle of the freeway. How can I be in control of me losing my job a week before Christmas? But you are. It is your choice. It is the accumulation of your choices that make up that world for you. All of those things had their effect. Now, you might say, and quite legitimately so, how could I have known in advance that those choices would have led to that? How could I have known in advance that I would have extended myself to this company who filed bankruptcy and left me without any money? How could I know in advance that I was supposed to be an aerospace engineer and I was a music major? How was I supposed to know that I majored in biology but I was a gifted linguist? Well, that's all about awareness, isn't it? That's all about taking great care about what you put into the mind. And maybe sometimes we're a little too busy. Do you know what I mean? You sitting there at your computer terminal, my friend BJ, or my friend John, or my friend David. As you take care and you put your life together, it's okay to be busy. It's okay to be intense. Lord knows I'm busy. I'm intense. But you got to take those quiet times. I do it through meditation. Some of you have taken my advice. Some of you have gone out and bought Drun Vilo Melchizedek's book. Actually, has three books, Living in the Heart, and then The Ancient Secret of the Flower of Life, Volume 1 and Volume 2. I highly recommend these books. You can reach them going to X Squared Radio. Just go to Drun Vilo's website and buy the books and read them. This kind of meditation, it doesn't just make you quiet. It makes you active. It gives you the tools to be able to extend your energy and manifest things, to do things on purpose. Now, that's powerful. That's very powerful. I want to leave that with you. This is just a preview of what you're going to learn in the workshop at Mount Shasta. So you definitely want to go there and click on that. Hey, also, I wanted to let you know that I wanted to thank you for your purchases from X Squared Radio. Recently, many, many of you have gone to NitroPack, and you have taken advantage of the fantastic emergency preparedness supplies that they have there, not the least of which is a very excellent 72-hour kit. Now, you never know when a disaster is going to hit, and hopefully they never do, but you just never know when you're going to be sent out of your home. One of the members where I go to church, his brother's house caught on fire today. Not real serious damage, but it ran him out of the house, and now they have to live in a hotel. But it would be really nice if they had a 72-hour kit so that at least they have what they need. They could just pick it up and leave the house and not feel so put out. Fortunately, they had good insurance and a good agent. You never know when you're going to need that stuff. Also, don't forget about the inkjet supplies at 123 Inkjets. I buy all my supplies there. Very inexpensive. You cannot beat the price. Free shipping, and you get a chance to win a free printer every time you buy. So don't forget to click on that 123 Inkjets link. I wanted to give you a little bit of global warming news as well. There is a documentary coming out. It's in this article I'm going to read you. We have heard a lot of press, and there are a lot of people on BBS Radio that talk about this and on other networks as well. Global warming is a main headline, and political parties have made great hay out of this. Some of this is not going to be attractive to you, but I am here to present both sides, and everything is positive in here. We try to bring the past and the future to bear here and give everybody their say, so that you, very intelligent, very eclectic listeners, earth explorers all, can make your decision for yourself. Here it is. Accepted theories about man causing global warming are lies, claim a controversial new TV documentary. The Great Global Warming Swindle, backed by eminent scientists, is set to rock the accepted consensus that climate change is being driven by humans. The program, to be screened on Channel 4 on Thursday, March 8th, will see a series of respected scientists attack the, quote, propaganda that they claim is killing the world's poor. Even the co-founder of Greenpeace, Patrick Moore, is shown, claiming African countries should be encouraged to burn more CO2. Nobody in the documentary defends the greenhouse effect theory, as it claims that climate change is natural, has been occurring for years, and ice falling from glaciers is just the spring breakup, and as normal as leaves falling in autumn. A source at Channel 4 said, "It is essential a polemic, and we are expecting it to cause trouble. But this is the controversial programming that Channel 4 is renowned for." Controversial director Martin Durkin said, "You can see the problems with the science of global warming, but people just don't believe you. It's taken 10 years to get this commissioned. I think it will go down in history as the first chapter in a new era of the relationship between scientists and society. Legitimate scientists, people with qualifications, are the bad guys. It is a big story that is going to cause controversy. It is very rare that a film changes history, but I think this is a turning point, and in 5 years, the idea that the greenhouse effect is the main reason behind global warming will be seen as total bollocks." Al Gore might have won an Oscar for An Inconvenient Truth, but the film is very misleading, and he has got the relationship between CO2 and climate change the wrong way around. Close quote. One major piece of evidence of CO2 causing global warming are ice core samples from Antarctica, which show that for hundreds of years, global warming has been accompanied by higher levels of CO2 in the atmosphere. In The Great Global Warming Swindle, Al Gore is shown claiming this proves the theory, but paleontologist Professor Ian Clark claims in the documentary that it actually shows the opposite. He has evidence showing that warmer spells in the Earth's history actually came an average of 800 years before the rise in CO2 levels. Professor Clark believes increased levels of CO2 are because the Earth is heating up and not the cause. He says that most CO2 in the atmosphere comes from the oceans, which dissolve the gas. When the temperature increases, more gas is released into the atmosphere, and when global temperatures cool, more CO2 is taken in. Because of the immense size of the oceans, he said they take time to catch up with the climate trends, and this memory effect is responsible for the lag. Scientists in the program also raise another discrepancy with the official line, showing that most of the recent global warming occurred before 1940, when global temperatures then fell for four decades. It was only in the late 1970s that the current trend of rising temperatures began. This, claims the skeptics, is the flaw in the CO2 theory, because the post-war economic boom produced more CO2 and should, according to the consensus, have meant a rise in global temperatures. The program claims there appears to be a consensus across science that CO2 is responsible for global warming, but Professor Paul Ryder is shown to disagree. He said the influential United Nations report on climate change that claimed humans were responsible was a sham. It claimed to be the opinion of 2,500 leading scientists, but Professor Ryder said it included names of scientists who disagreed with the findings and resigned from the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on the Climate Change, and said the report was finalized by government appointees. The CO2 theory is further undermined by claims that billions of pounds is being provided by governments to fund greenhouse effect research, so thousands of scientists know their job depends on the theory continuing to be seen as fact. The program claims efforts to reduce CO2 are killing Africans who have to burn fires inside their home, causing cancer and lung damage because their governments are being encouraged to use wind and solar panels that are not capable of supplying the continent with electricity, instead of coal and oil burning power stations that could. Greenpeace co-founder Patrick Moore is shown saying environmentalists have romanticized peasant life, but this is anti-human. They are saying the world's poorest people should have the world's most expensive form of energy, really saying they can't have electricity. Gary Calder, a former editor of New Scientist, is featured in the program and has just released a book claiming that clouds are the real reason behind climate change. The Chilling Stars was written by Danish scientist Henrik Svendsmark, who published a scientific paper claiming cosmic rays cause clouds to form, reducing the global temperature. The theory is shown in the program. Mr. Calder said, Henrik Svendsmark saw that cloudiness varies according to how many atomic particles are coming in from exploded stars. When there are more cosmic rays, there are more clouds. However, solar winds bat away many of the cosmic rays, and the sun is currently in its most active phase, which would be an explanation for global warming. I am a science journalist, and in my career I have been told by eminent scientists that black holes do not exist, and it is impossible that continents move. But in science, the experts are usually wrong. For me, this is a cracking science story. I don't come from any political position, and I'm certainly not funded by the multinationals, although my bank manager would like me to be. I talk to scientists and come up with one story, and Al Gore talks to another set of scientists and comes up with a different story. So knowing which scientists to talk to is part of the skill. Some, who appear to be disinterested, are themselves getting billions of dollars of research money from the government. The few millions of dollars of research money from multinationals can't compare to the government funding. So you find the American scientific establishment is all for man-made global warming. We have the same situation in Britain. The government's chief scientific advisor, Sir David King, is supposed to be the representative of all that is good in British science. So it is disturbing he and the government are ignoring a raft of evidence against the greenhouse effect being the main driver against climate change. The program shows how the global warming research drive began when Margaret Thatcher gave money to scientists to prove burning coal and oil was harmful as part of her drive for nuclear power. Philip Stott, Professor Emeritus of Biogeography at the School of Oriental and African Studies in London, who also features in the film, warned the issue was too complex to be down to one single factor, whether CO2 or clouds. He said, "The greenhouse effect theory worried me from the start because you can't say just what one factor can have this effect. The system is too complex to say exactly what effect of cutting back in CO2 production would be, or indeed of continuing to produce CO2. It's ridiculous to see politicians arguing over whether they will allow the global temperature to rise by 2°C or 3°C. Mr. Stott said the film could mark the point where scientists advocating the greenhouse effect theory began to lose the argument. He continued, "It's a brave program at the moment to give excluded voices their say, and maybe it is just the beginning. At the moment, there is also a McCarthyism movement in science, where the greenhouse effect is like a puritanical religion, and this is dangerous." In the program, Nigel Calder says, "The greenhouse effect is seen as a religion, and if you don't agree, you are a heretic." He added, "However, I think this program will help further debate, and scientists not directly involved in global warming studies may begin to study what is being said, become more open-minded and more questioning. But this will happen slowly." And we here at X Squared Radio have been saying pretty much the same thing. I think that man does have some effect. We can see that. But we can also see that there are great, great forces at work on the Earth. The Earth may, in fact, be, in a sense, alive. A combination of spirit matter and physical matter working in conjunction one with another. That kind of sounds familiar. It sounds like a human body. We are, in fact, minerals and vitamins and iron and water and calcium, and we are sunlight, but we are also spirit. We are also intelligence. We are also our desires, our personality, our spirit form that comes here and animates this body. Earth is the same way. Whether or not the Earth has feelings, whether or not the Earth has a personality, well, that remains to be seen. That's a little bit of a debate, maybe. Maybe there are those who are sensitive to that and those who are not sensitive to that. But Earth has a way of cleansing itself. I look back in my work in the oil business, and I've in oil and gas industry, and I've been out in the field, and I've seen photographs in job shacks of oil wells that got away. I was in a valley in Kentucky, where there was a gusher that got away and they couldn't get it capped. It literally ran for weeks, And it finally slowed down enough, the gas drive slowed down enough, they could get into the wellhead and actually get a valve on it and get it capped off. But this black and white photograph that I saw shows people waist deep. The valley was filled with waist deep crude oil that had pumped out of the ground. Now, we're talking a valley perhaps 9 or 10,000 acres, completely filled to the waist with oil. And I was in this area in the mid-1980s. Now, this spill occurred sometime in the 1950s, but I was there in the mid-1980s. And I can tell you that it was clean. There was grass growing, there was corn growing, there were people farming, the streams were clean and you could fish in them, and the river was clean, and the sand was as clean as that you find on any river beach. 40 years at the most, and this area was clean. Earth has a way of rebounding from these things. We remember the Exxon Valdez up in the Northwest running aground and ruining the ecology in that area. That was just a few years ago. But now you can go up to that beach and there's scantily a black rock left from that. In another 25 years, you won't even know it was there. So this is where we're at. This is what we're talking about. The earth can rebound from these things. So that's where we're at. And we are coming up on the top of the hour. I wanted to let you know that Rob Simone is going to be our guest tonight. We are going to go off the air for about 60 seconds or so, right after my commercial break. And then we will dial him up and have him on the air with you. So fear not. We may run a little sound in the background, but we haven't gone anywhere. Rob Simone will be our guest at the top of the hour. In about 4.5 minutes, we will take that break. And we will open up the phone lines, too. I'm going to give those again to you right now. If you're driving in a car, you have access to your cell phone, you can pull over and get to a pay phone. Whatever it takes to call into X Squared Radio, we'll be here and we'll be able to take your call. Those numbers, toll-free in the United States, 877-876-5227. Anywhere in Canada, we want you to be able to call in toll-free as well, 888-810-8322. And for those of you that have free long distance anywhere you call, if you have a cell phone or a lot of these landlines now have free long distance, so it doesn't make any difference. If you're in Europe, if you're in New Zealand, Australia, we have a lot of listeners in the UK. It doesn't matter. You can call in 530-876-3222. We'll open up the phone lines right at 4 o'clock Pacific time. And you can join us right here at X Squared Radio. We do apologize for the delay. But as you can see, sometimes we have technical difficulties and sometimes we have difficulties in logistics. And that's our case tonight. Rob Simone was scheduled to be on. He wanted to be on. But you know how traffic can be in Los Angeles? Well, if you don't live there, maybe you can discover what it's like sometime by visiting there. It can be quite frustrating when the traffic stops. You just don't go. So anyway, Rob is going to be on right at the top of the hour. In about 45 seconds, we will take that break. We'll be talking about the film Fast Walkers. We'll be talking about changes in UFO research and other exciting things. So hang with us. Don't go anywhere. We're here at X Squared Radio so that you can be connected. So make sure that you don't go anywhere. I'm Brooks Agnew, and this is X Squared Radio. Did you know you have existed for many thousands of years? The thought of reincarnation escapes most people, as it did me until I read this book. Your Never-Ending Life is the first in the Universal Learning Series from Sandy Andrews. Search your higher mind. Find your soulmate. And know that you are never alone in this world. The treasures of the eternities are yours. And your first step is to read the book. Click the banner for Your Never-Ending Life by Sandy Andrew at X Squared Radio and order the book today. There is something about to happen to the Earth. You know it. You can feel it. Well, the creators of the Kill Shot have collected the evidence for you in a stunning new documentary called The Horizon Project. The first DVD is now in print, and you can get it by clicking on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio. Believe me when I tell you, this may be the most important video production you will ever see. This is destined to air on the Discovery Channel or the History Channel, but you need the uncut version. Click the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio and get your copies today. Many people write us here at X Squared Radio wanting to know how to get prepared for the coming cataclysms. Well, we have been successful in acquiring the best affiliate in the world for emergency preparedness. NitroPak has been around for 18 years and can provide everything you need for life. They have everything from a 72-hour kit to a year's supply of excellent quality foods and supplements for a single person or a whole family. Don't be left without the essentials of life. NitroPak is the name. Click the banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were used to restore knowledge lost for over 6,000 years in our first book. The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 2, called 2012 and Harvest of the End Times, brings us vital knowledge for the race of mankind. Have the Watchers returned? What did the Aztecs mean by their ancient predictions for the year 2012? Why is Earth changing so rapidly now before our very eyes? Who were the Shining Ones who lived on the Earth and worked with mankind as they recovered from cataclysm? Who are we? Where did we come from? If you could find a book that answers just one of these questions, you'd buy it. Now there are two of the theories that are sweeping the world with its message. Go to arcofmillionsofyears.com and get your autographed copy today. Now, also available in full audio version. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio.
Space travel.
Welcome back, my friends, to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. You are all welcome here, Earth Explorers. We try to keep the results always positive in here. This week on X Squared Radio, we have the author, talk radio host, and Earth Explorer, Rob Simone, with us. He not only has roamed the most dangerous societies on Earth, he was featured in the recent release of Fast Walkers. This film is directed and produced in such a way that the presence of UFOs can no longer be denied. He is here with us tonight. Welcome, Rob Simone. How are you?
Brooks, I am fine. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, we have a little bit of digital...
check 1, 2.
Your voice. That'll clear up, though, I'm sure.
I certainly hope so. You sound loud and clear. Hope I'm coming through okay.
That's all right. I know that it could be you're off planet, but I know you're just in Los Angeles. We met for the first time at the Conscious Life Expo. You were on a panel explaining the latest in UFO news, along with several others like Sean David Morton and Jose Escamilla. And we'll cover the film Fast Walker in our last hour. So I want to know what you found out is happening most recently in the world of off-world interactions with Earth. What's going on out there?
Well, first of all, are you able to hear me okay? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Are you there now?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you wonderfully right now. Okay, that's good. It cleared up.
Okay, good. Well, yes, the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles, it was an extraordinary conference, and I was lucky enough to be asked to speak there and present some of my research about the Aboriginals of Australia and their extraterrestrial encounters. But yes, there was also a panel of ufologists, and we all sort of shared some of our work, and we took questions. And I think what most of it focused on was the current state of ufology. And I like to refer to ufology, which is the study of UFOs and the related field of extraterrestrial contact, as an emerging science, because that's exactly what it is. And what we're seeing today is an increased frequency of UFO sightings. There was one recently featured on over Hawaii that was covered by the Fox News affiliate. There was the Chicago sighting. And they seem to be increasing in frequency. And so this brings about the question of disclosure. When is it going to happen? And what will it entail? And I feel as though that we are getting closer to a disclosure event. And the formal definition, of course, of disclosure is the government recognizing officially contact with extraterrestrial. And we all know that they've been covering up a lot of it, which has come out through freedom of information requests. And I think people now are getting more and more prepared, more and more open to this idea. And every year, as we get closer to 2012, I think it's inevitable that we're going to have to face this issue face-to-face, individually and as a nation.
Well, I kind of feel the same way. I've sort of been talking about it and describing it as a function of global first contact. I used to think that, they would just land on the White House lawn and that would be the end of it. But after I had Robert Stanley on the program and we talked about his book, Close Encounters Over Washington, I discovered that they already have landed on the White House lawn, but there was no intelligent life there. So it didn't go any further than that. It just didn't come out in the news. Most people that I talk to say, yeah, I think I believe in UFOs, but I've never seen one. I'd kind of like to, and if I saw one, I'd really believe. And it's still a matter of belief for people, even though lots and lots of people appear to have had experiences and they've seen lots of blurry pictures or real clear pictures, they haven't seen for themselves. So what do you have to say for the person that has never seen a UFO, and they're going to be exposed to real hard data for the first time in their lives?
Well, that's a great question. And just let me first touch on something you said just before that about Washington and UFOs landing on the White House lawn. I recently shot a documentary there in November that was focusing on two events. 1952, there were dramatic sightings over the Capitol building. They were photographed, and they ran in many major newspapers across the country. So we have had extraordinary sightings, and we even managed to track down the 86-year-old radar operator who was on duty at the time at Washington National Airport, who actually saw these things on his radar screen and even gave us the exact location and the speed at which they were traveling, which was some 1,400 miles an hour, a speed in which that no aircraft at that time was able to achieve. And the documentary also touches upon 50 years later, a few other people had incredible sightings and photographic evidence over the Capitol building as well. So there is an extraordinary amount of activity, and it does get put out there. And as far as people sort of seeing things for themselves and you know, coming face-to-face with this type of information, I would say this, that going back, as I have, researching this phenomenon to the earliest references, I found cave paintings in southern France that go back 30,000 years that have incredible, anomalous images. Ever since man was able to scratch out an image on a cave wall, we have been seeing references to unusual people coming down, you know, from the heavens. People with unusually shaped heads, or what looked to be like, you know, sort of astronaut suits. We see ships and things in the air, certain geometric patterns that simply don't fit. And if you are of the mindset that you are open to this phenomenon, and you're wanting to get a closer look, or you're wanting to have an experience of your own, I would say this, that if you take one step toward this larger reality, it'll take two steps towards you. And if you incorporate this belief internally and you really accept it at heart and then go outside and then start exploring this in an earnest way with a camera, with your naked eye, you will invite this experience into your life.
Well, that's interesting. You mentioned the south of France. You've been an Earth explorer for a long time, and you recently wrote a new book. I paged through it during the expo. How
right.
did you get involved with traveling the world in the way you do?
For me, it was a little unusual. I was a entertainer for about 10 years on the East Coast and really achieved everything I wanted to do in the music business. But all the while, I was spending my free time, of which I had quite a bit, towards the earnest sort of pursuit of this field and all its facets and all the varying paranormal aspects to the human psychology, exobiology, and so forth. And I realized that I wanted to sort of get into this in a very you know, practical way. And I contacted the leader of an organization that I felt was taking the most pragmatic steps toward exploring this field and trying to end the secrecy. That organization was called CAUSE, C-A-U-S, stood for Citizens Against UFO Secrecy. And I was already a paralegal. I wasn't working as a paralegal, but I had my degree. So I contacted this fellow, Peter Gersten, Esquire, moved out to Sedona, Arizona, where he had his headquarters set up. And he was an attorney, I was a paralegal, and we brought lawsuits against the government to end the secrecy embargo. Because we know they have information. Astronauts and former ex-military all have told us what they have done and where they have done it. We know that reports were generated. We know that there's a paper trail. And we thought a legal remedy would be the most practical way to sort of pry open some of this information. And we were very successful. One of our cases was appealed all the way to the Supreme Court. We managed to bring a lawsuit against the DOD in federal court in Phoenix, Arizona. We were featured on Art Bell every month, and it was an extraordinary time. And then from there, I traveled around the world for 3 years, exploring this phenomenon in the Middle East, in the Himalayas, Nepal, and the outback of Australia, simply because I wanted to go around the world. And in doing so, it afforded me the opportunity to explore this without any other agenda. I was able to go as deep as I wanted.
When you made your way to the Middle East, how did you get around on your own? I mean, you know, you weren't in the green zone. How did you do that?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. The Middle East is an interesting place, and I have done some traveling before I did this world tour, so I was pretty kind of savvy. And the reality on the ground is much different from what people would think. For instance, I would much rather be in an Arab city or a Muslim city at 3 o'clock in the morning than any Western city, because you're far safer. Because Muslims, as a rule, do not steal, and we don't have the crime that we have in the Western country. They don't drink alcohol, and there's very little drug use. So it's a very different environment over there, and you're very safe. Now, of course, I traveled in places like the West Bank because I was going through different tombs, and I was going to different places in Egypt and Yemen, and yeah, I really was lucky to get out of there alive. But the thing is you have to know the rules of engagement. There's a certain code that Muslims have, and if you know the code and sort of stick to it, and with a little bit of luck, you can do okay. Whereas if you're, say, traveling in South America or other places, you know, and up against just bandits without any code, it's a little different. But believe it or not, even the extremists over there have a way of doing things that if you are knowledgeable about how they work and what the customs are and what the situation is with the Bedouins as opposed to the Muslim extremists, because they're two different worlds, you can do okay.
Wow. So you you had events where you feared for your life?
Yeah, I was shot at more times than I want to remember. I have been on the working end of an AK-47 more times than I care to remember. I've had guns pointed at me. I've had close escapes with terrorist bombings in Turkey and in Israel. I have the unfortunate honor of having been shot at not only by Bedouins and Arabs, but also by the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, because I happened to be on the Ramallah side at the time, and they just shoot, you know, into the West Bank. They don't care who they're shooting at. So yeah, it was extremely dangerous. And when I look back at on it now, it's a little weird because, you know, when I was going through all this stuff, I knew of no other way. I simply move forward and judge the situations as they come.
Right.
And I guess I'm not like most people where I stop and think about what I'm doing. I only see the path that I should be on. We all have this intuition inside of us. And being completely free and having, you know, being able to travel as much as I wanted and stay in a place as long as I wanted, I was completely within sort of my realm of intuition. And if you're on your, you know, your path, on your proper journey, then whatever happens is out of your, you know, sort of concern. Because you're
right,
simply
right.
Moving
forward. You're on purpose. And
You're on purpose. So you have this sense, you have this sort of heightened sense of reality and understanding that allows you to get through very difficult situations.
There's a strange kind of confidence that comes when you know you're on purpose and you know that no matter what happens, you're going to negotiate right through the flying particles and you're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
Did you have any experiences that were really enlightening or inspiring while you were in those countries?
Oh, absolutely. You know, everyone, it was just one of my many adventures, and this is also in my new book, is the birthplace of Jesus Christ. And, of course, everyone thinks that he was born in a manger, but that's not really true. In fact, it's more likely that he was in some sort of stone structure, a cave, either natural or semi-artificial, that would have been available for him to take some sort of refuge in, or Joseph and Mary, rather, to take refuge in. And there is a location in Bethlehem called the Cave of Christ. And it is recognized world-round as the oldest church in the world as the birthplace of Christ. And when I went there during the Intifada, and to go to Bethlehem, you have to leave Israel proper and enter into the Palestinian-controlled part of that region. And to do that, you have to sneak on a minibus, go through multiple checkpoints, keep your mouth shut, and try not to to arouse suspicion, get off the minibus, and make your way to another city. Looking back on it, I kind of don't even know how I did it, but I had the proper attire. I have the proper look. You know, I kind of look Middle Eastern with the right beard. People would speak Arabic to me. And so you have to know how to behave like everyone else. And I finally made it to this church, going through all the streets and getting all the strange looks from people. Because in the Middle East and in India, it's not like it is in the Western country. Everyone stares at everybody else. And if anything is out of place, people have no problem just stopping what they're doing and staring. Because they, you know, they're not as pressed for time as we are here in the States. They're not jumping in and out of their Cadillac Seville and getting Starbucks. They, you know, they have a lot more time. The economy is very much depressed. So anything that happens, you know, they will take time and stop and dwell, as it were. But when I finally made it to the church where this cave is housed, it was dead empty. And there was only the Palestinian police. And I approached very cautiously and made my way in. And yes, at this location was the most incredible energy that I had ever encountered. And I have even heard stories of, you know, grown men having been carried out of this place. And it was one of those places where you're still not sure of what exactly happened there. The belief system and the belief placed upon it might very well infuse this place with this energy, or it could very well be that Christ actually did come into the world there, and some sort of lingering remnants of his energy remains.
Well, what about the recent news story of the individual that is said to have found the coffin of Jesus Christ?
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. James Cameron, director of The Abyss and Titanic, has thrown his weight and support against this new documentary that's coming out. It's funny enough, I know exactly where this tomb is. It's just outside the wall of Jerusalem. And it is, in fact, a tomb. They found bones there. But what's really extraordinary is that this tomb was inscribed. And the inscription bore out that this was, in fact, Jesus, you know, son of Joseph, and all the relatives that were inscribed in here to identify the people in this tomb match up with Jesus, and it is something that is not 100%, but the odds of this being somebody else with all the right names of all the right relatives brings it to a very high probability that we're either dealing with Jesus himself or a very large coincidence of someone having the same name and the same relative names. I'm talking about DNA testing, but there's no DNA to match it up to.
I guess not.
Yeah.
Well, one of my AOL instant message people flashed me a question. She wanted to know if you thought it was feasible for a female to retrace the very steps that you've done in your world travels, or is that exclusively in the Arab world reserved for men?
Well, I think a woman, yes, who can step out into the world, and sure, absolutely. I met a lady about my same age from Germany. Blonde hair, blue eyes. She traveled through Iran for the better part of 8 weeks. She said it was a great time. So yeah, anybody can do it if it's, you know, sort of meant to be for them and they're able to handle difficult situations. As far as gender goes, there's not a whole lot of difference in the Middle East, and here's why. Because if you're a woman, a Middle Eastern woman in that country, you are expected to cover your head. If you're in Yemen, you have to cover your whole body. If you're in Saudi Arabia, you have to pray five times a day, or the religious police, and that's exactly what they're called, will, you know, beat you with a stick and maybe throw you in jail. And if you're a woman, you can't go out unescorted. So yes, they are held to this extraordinarily, sort of archaic level of submission. However, any Western person or any outsider is not held to that, and they are no way expected to conform to any of local customs.
Well, that's encouraging. Unless the blue-eyed, blonde-haired woman that went was 6'4" and weighed 220 pounds and was on the Swedish shot put team. If she was slight of frame, maybe that gives a little hope for just about anybody that would like to make that kind of exploration. You said that you'd been in the Australian outback. That makes American deserts sort of look like Disney World. How did you survive there?
Yeah, let me tell you, the outback of Australia is the deadliest place in the world. They hold the record for the most deadly snakes, for the hottest place in the world, for the most deadly insects, and the most isolated city in the world. It is an amazing, amazing place. I went out there. I bought a car for just a few $100, a used car, and I drove it around Australia, made my way into the outback, and just about 100 miles into the outback, I had to drive through a plague of locusts. And I remember stopping off in some small town, and some lady said, "Oh, yeah, it's a plague." And evidently, this sort of thing happens down there from time to time. The locals
plague
stride. And the funny thing is, I mean, it was so bad, Brooks, that, I mean, the locusts were just, there were just millions of them, and they were everywhere. And they were just, they covered the road. And what happens is when you drove over the highway, as the car got right up on top of them, they would sort of jump up, and they would end up splattering all over the windshield. It was so bad, I had to stop every 2 hours and scrape them off my radiator because my engine would overheat.
I want to keep moving on, but I have two people now, AOL instant messaging me, asking me if the bones of Jesus have actually been found. Doesn't that kind of negate the fact that he rose with his body on the third day?
Yeah.
That's gonna raise the hackles.
Yeah, they did find bones. It's true. Now you got to remember that this extra life of Jesus is something that is written into many different cultures and traditions. There were texts that were found in Rennes-le-Château in the Languedoc region of southern France that pointed to this. Mary Magdalene is often cited as someone who was almost an equal of Jesus and a healer, and it was also perhaps a coded symbol for the real Holy Grail. We have the fact that Jesus was, being a rabbi, would have been expected to have been married. We have his lost years from 7 to 27, where it is thought that he traveled through India, and this would have been very feasible for him because his uncle was Joseph of Arimathea, who was a tin trader and had access to all sorts of travel routes. Of course, Joseph of Arimathea was the one who brought Christianity to England, where, you know, supposedly he brought the Holy Grail there. So we have Jesus, we have him exploring, we have him going through these lost years. Many people think he went to India and studied with the great yogis and masters and learned from the ascended masters and learned their ways. Because they were around long before Jesus was. The Hindu and the Sanskrit teachings go back, 6,000 years. So he probably, there's a lot of good evidence for that because there are even temples in that part of the world that have him, place him there at that time. The former Prime Minister of India said that there is a great tradition of Jesus traveling through India during his time. And in fact, there is a tomb that is supposedly Jesus' tomb in India, along with the Virgin Mary's, where it was said he, after the crucifixion, was brought back to this cave where two healers from India, whom he had met during his lost years, were waiting for him. They revived him, and if you look at the biblical tradition, he showed himself to many people after the crucifixion. He even ate a meal. Now, if you rose from the dead, I dare say the last thing you would need in this body, this transubstantiated body, is some falafel. If you know what I mean, Brooke.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of evidence in the New Testament as well to suggest that he very well might have gone on and started a lineage that is now the that became the kings and queens of Europe. As you know, they fancied themselves to be divinely ordained. And as I say, this is something that we're going to have to come to terms with.
Yeah, I have a couple of people on AOL, and they've made a little bit of a jump, too, that even if they have found mortal bones that may have belonged to Jesus Christ, that perhaps when he was resurrected, that he just activated a brand new 100% body. I mean, if he was the Son of God, maybe in command of all the elements, he could just reassemble a new body that had, you know, greater capacities than just mortal capacities. And when he showed himself to Mary Magdalene right after the tomb, he told her, you know, not to touch him, that he had not ascended to his Father, which was in heaven, that maybe he was in just a different form at that moment. Of course, he stayed for 6 more weeks, and he did all kinds of physical things with people, but it's possible that he just left his bones behind in that tomb. So maybe both things are true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we're dealing with something that has been referenced in different cultures, people rising from the dead. And it is also a tradition of the ancient schools of wisdom, especially the one in Heliopolis, where the ultimate test of an ascended master is to die and come back to life. So it also fits with the ancient Hindu tradition of dying and being reborn. And that would have been the ultimate test, an ultimate sort of symbol of a true ascended master. So, again, you know, we are sort of on the edge, I think, of perhaps revealing some new truths. That the jury is still out, but I think it deserves some serious attention.
Well, it's kind of interesting that even the historians and prophets that wrote in Christian scriptures, even in books like Revelation, did warn people that in the last days knowledge would come out that would shake your faith, that even if the very elect could be deceived, they will be deceived. So, you know, we've put all of our eggs in one basket, so to speak, and now, you know, something has come along to say that your idea that the dead body of Jesus was the resurrected Jesus, not like Lazarus, but in a glorified form. Lazarus, I understand, he just picked up his old bones and his old carcass and just walked out of the tomb. But that's a little different than being resurrected. Lazarus was not an ascended master. To be able to recall all of your energy and your memories and your abilities and reform them into a physical form is truly remarkable. And as far as I know, Jesus is the only one to be recorded to have done it.
Hmm. Well, actually, there are Egyptian anecdotes that talk about this sort of rebirth, and there are other traditions and other civilizations that also have this virgin birth. Of course, this is not new. This was not something
virgin birth isn't new. I mean,
yeah.
Even Melchizedek was born of Nir's wife, and of course he was celibate because he was working in the temple 3 years when she became impregnated, and Melchizedek was taken off planet and brought back after the flood. So virgin birth is not unheard of in the scriptures. In fact, that's the Fibonacci way of giving birth, is that the woman gives birth without having physical intercourse with a man.
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, touching upon what you said earlier, it's absolutely true in the book of Revelations that in the end times there will be an opening of knowledge. And many people, including myself, thought that might have referred to the Bible code and this extraordinary amount of information that came out of the Old Testament once we were able to invent the supercomputer that would have been the only way to realize and see these codes, you know, to put every letter of the Old Testament in and string it out to one long sentence and then be able to go through a series of numbers to check it out. But you know what? It could be something else. It could be other revelations. It could be an opening of knowledge of ourselves. It could be an opening of knowledge of a larger brotherhood and sisterhood of man and other intelligence from off-planet or even underneath the planet, as we might explore at some point in the future. But yes, I think whatever it is, it is coming, and it's coming fast, and the quicker the better, because we need to grow up. We need to mature as a civilization. Traveling around the world, I noticed that most of the people in the developing world were in some ways more advanced spiritually than we were, because they had already accepted this larger reality. And the Hindus have no trouble with other extraterrestrial life, nor do most of the Muslims.
What about the indigenous people of Australia? How did you find them to be relative to maybe mankind not being alone in the universe and some of these greater potentials of humanity?
Well, yeah, that's what I spoke about just recently in Los Angeles. Having lived with them for a time, I was absolutely sort of stunned to find out that their creator god legends are very similar to what we and I would consider as sort of ancient astronaut stories. The sounds that these astronauts made when they were coming and going, what they did, how they interacted with the ancient peoples. Given all that, it is very safe to say that an overwhelming majority, if not practically all, of the Aboriginals of Australia are very comfortable with this idea of not only there being other life out there on the planet, but that their ancient peoples were in contact with them, shared information, and somehow had some kind of exchange program going on. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, when I was in Mexico, I went to the, in Mexico City, the Museum of Anthropology, very, very good museum. If you're in Mexico City, any of you out there, make sure to go to that museum. It's definitely worth a day. They had recovered some figurines that had been buried and were taken out of a cave. I guess they went about 1200 BC, and it showed six large beings wearing headdresses and feathers that looked like wings, and then each of them held what appeared to be a creation glyph, sort of a certain phase of the creation, either of the universe or of the earth. And in front of them were 10 or 15 smaller, obviously about half the height, of people who seemed to be in different modes of worshiping or learning or reaching their hands to the sky. It appeared as though these smaller beings were being taught something about the creation from the larger beings. I thought that was just fascinating.
Well, you know what? I also explored this in a similar context with the Aboriginals, and I was able to get photographs and samples of their artwork, which is a very big component of the Aboriginal community, and some of their images were absolutely stunning. They had depicted these creator gods with the exact characteristics that we assign to the Greys, these aliens with the big heads and the large eyes. Their artwork, some dating back thousands of years, shows these very same creatures in extraordinary detail that are accompanied by the oral traditions that go hand in hand with these creatures coming down and interacting with their ancient peoples. So yeah, some of the images that they show really sort of brings it home, because what we're seeing is not only in the Aboriginal community, but also in Nepal. I've also have images from other countries where we see the same sort of iconic shape of the proportional head, and the chin, and the eyes. It seems to show up regardless of what civilization, where it is, and even when it occurred.
Really, so there's a commonality in the biology of who they're interacting with?
Or as far as these depictions that I've discovered in their artwork, in the cave paintings, and these rock glyphs, and these petroglyphs, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have another listener that's asking me more questions about the Bible codes. You said that the Old Testament is strung together in one big long line, and then all possible combinations are examined by computer for... I mean, we've been able to find historical events in the Bible code. How successful have they been in finding future events in the Bible code and posturing for that?
Well, yeah, it's... What they do is they string all of the letters together. Now, you got to remember, this would only work for the Old Testament because the New Testament is a collection of books that were written, you know, by the four, major people and prophets and Matthew, Mark, you know, Luke,
and then Paul wrote a bunch of letters.
Yeah, well, most of it.
They're assembled in order of size, not even date.
Exactly, and it was subject to revisions and omissions and things like that. Now, the Old Testament is completely different. This supposedly came, you know, right from the horse's mouth. I hate to refer to a guy as a horse, but, you know, the God of the Old Testament killed, you know, about 500,000 people, including he had the Jews turn on the Jews during the Exodus. What's that?
So they wiped out whole communities, even their animals.
That's what I mean. It's the God of the Old Testament maybe had to be there at the time, but I'm not sure that I fully understand what was going on back then with all that killing. But I will say this, that they were so exacting in preserving every single letter that if a scribe that was copying the Old Testament, long ago, 1,000 years ago, if he was interrupted during this process, even though he didn't make a mistake, you'd have to throw the whole thing out. So they had very strict standards. So the Old Testament works in this context. And what they found was that the text that was related to future events or past events would be woven into the surface text somehow. In other words, if it was a passage about an upcoming storm or some sort of cataclysm, what they do is they would skip every sort of fifth letter. If they were looking for a name, like Osama bin Laden, when they find an O, they would go however many letters till they found the next word in Osama's name. And whatever that gap was, whether it be 15 words or 20 words, they would go another 20 words. And if they found the next letter and say Osama, then they would keep going. And if it didn't work, they would move on to the next time that the first letter of Osama's name was found. So it has to be an exact spacing. And what they found was when they did find, say, references to people getting assassinated, it would be under text that would seem to talk about the very same subject matter. So, yeah, there is incredible stuff. The Rockefeller Foundation, I think, is in charge of most of the research. We don't have unlimited access to Bible code researchers, but there is enough there to suggest that there is an extraordinary possibility of this thing yielding all kinds of events, both past and present.
Well, that is really interesting. And you know that in these think tanks and these research groups, they're just running reams of anything that will not turn out like Mixaplica block or something. It will come out something like, you know, New York Stock Exchange or Microsoft or something like that, something that makes sense in our day or at least relatively close to our day, anything that's phonetically or grammatically correct. They're just running lists and lists of these things. But you have to wonder how much stock are they putting in it? Are they sort of like time traveler wannabes that they're moving their money and their assets and taking certain electronic precautions or economic precautions based on predictions that they're getting from these codes without telling the rest of us, of course.
Right.
I think that's going on. I would think it's going on.
It's hard to say. It really is. But I would say that there has been enough very impressive information that's come out to suggest that, yeah, somebody that would have access to this would be looking into it further for any number of uses, yeah.
Well, as soon as you mentioned the name Rockefeller and research, my conspiracy theory antenna immediately extends.
Exactly.
They're going to take precautions that are good for the few and sort of let happen what may to the many, whether it's a comet or recently we had a rumor of a galactic wave coming, and people wanted me to research into that and see if that was actually going to come on March 9th. And this individual evidently purported to be working for the European Space Agency. I did some research, couldn't find that he worked for them. There was no statements by the European Space Agency that such research was being done. And when I looked at the methodology of it, that they were actually sending out radio waves, bouncing it off this galactic wave, getting the information back and sort of tracking it, then I knew that it was bogus, because gravity travels at about 20,000 times the speed of light. So bouncing a radio wave off of it and waiting for it to come back would be a little late.
Well, you know, I've looked into this too, and I'm of the thinking that gravity travels at about a million times faster than the speed of light.
Yeah, well, the research that's been done, at least by Caltech, they have measured the gravity of the sun to Earth, because we've got that during eclipses. We measure the re-engagement of light from the sun to the Earth. We sort of check distance and time and measurements. But gravity travels, at least geometrically, they've been able to trigonometrically measure it. Now, we don't have but one astronomical unit from the Earth to the Sun, and not much of a base angle here, but that's what we've been able to definitively measure. It's about 20,000 times the speed of light.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the point is that, it is quite feasible that some sort of propulsion system in the future might be designed to utilize gravitational waves, which would then open the door for extra, you know, stellar travel, again opening the door to the ongoing contact of another race. So
Tom Van Flandern, he's a very well published astronomer, and I were talking about the asymptotic barrier of light speed, and he said, well, it's kind of like the speed of sound. You know, we tried to break it for years with propellers beating against the air, trying to push a craft faster than the speed of sound, and we couldn't do it until we could gather more air behind a compressor fan in a jet and then explode gas with it and push it out the back. I said, so what you're telling me is we need to learn a way to gather gravity, compress it, and push it out the back. And he said, exactly. Once you learn to do that, you've broken light speed.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, it's funny because, this ufology, this emerging science has already speculated and has gotten information that corresponds with this, and it's only now, it seems, that science is catching up with us in many ways.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk a lot about the film Fast Walkers, and we're going to talk about UFO technology, and believe me, Earth Explorers, in this next hour, we're going to blow your socks off, because if you haven't seen this film, and I think it's becoming available in DVD now, isn't it?
It's absolutely out. I was just at the premiere at the Harkin Theater in Phoenix, Arizona, last week, and it was shown to a sold-out crowd. And it is available, actually, on my website, and it is one of those things that is a great way to get a lot of information out. 30 of the top...
Tell us about your website.
Oh, sure. It's pretty simple. It's just robsimone.com. That's robsimone.com. And as I say, this DVD, you know, it's unique because you've got 30, you know, of the top experts and ufologists and airline pilots and nuclear physicists all weighing in on this. You've got incredible new footage, even some from the moon, and it really is one of those things that gets a lot of information out. It's all shot in high definition. It's all, you know, really well done, and we think that it will go a long way to educate people, and I think that we'll be hearing a lot more about it as the Los Angeles premiere gets underway and will probably happen sometime in April.
Wow, we might make it out there for the April one. That would be really nice to see.
Yeah,
I'm excited about it. We've seen a few works. We saw Dr. Greer's Disclosure Project in May of 2001. We saw Jose Escamilla's film, UFOs, The Greatest Story Ever Denied, which was sort of a collage of videos and film and things. Not so high definition, but definitely stimulating, I'll say that. I saw it. I liked it. Jose and I have been talking about it. We're going to try to get him to come on the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition and be a filmmaker there for the UFO section of our documentary. And we're talking to some other producers, too. We just think this is a rare opportunity to get 100 of the best people in the world on one boat at one time and make a heck of an expedition. I also picked up that you said you had collected pictures from all the places that you've been. And I know you've met thousands of people and you've heard all kinds of stories. So how are you going to present those to us in the future? Is there another book in Rob Simone?
Yeah. Well, the first book I put out that's just came out last week, it's called UFOs, Crop Circles, The Mayan Calendar, Sacred Places. It's a collection of articles that I have done, and some of them, a couple that haven't been published before. And this one, it goes into UFOs and NASA, goes into the sunship of Sweden and megalithic stone structure, the mysteries of the Middle East, the Mayan Calendar, Crop Circles, and the spirituality of disclosure. And yeah, there is another book that is my complete research from the 3 years traveling around the world that will also probably come out by the end of the year. And I'm often asked to speak at various places and present various aspects of this research because it goes into, as I say, different areas. You know, crop circles, ancient civilizations, stargates, the Mayan calendar. There really is a sort of a common thread that I have seen that goes through the entire world and all these cultures, you know, from either whether it was Nepal, whether it was Thailand or the Philippines or Hong Kong. There are certain things that really bind us as a species that I think is important. And that is, there is a connectivity to a larger universe. There are supernatural aspects of the human existence that is a vital part of our being that for some reason in the Western world we have a tendency to kind of switch off. There's a lot of mysteries out there. And I'd love...
As we're putting together this expedition, and
yeah.
I'm a little disheartened by my colleagues in the physics community because they do run across data all the time, and they just routinely throw it out because it doesn't fit their paradigm. It's maybe a little too supernatural for them, and instead of recording it like any good scientist would in their lab notebook, and then if it's anomalous enough, go back and do another experiment, we are going to try to bring that supernatural component into the documentary in a very big way. We're really trying to make sure that we meet the factor of the experiment with the highest consciousness that we can on the boat, because when that condition is met, maybe certain measurements can be made that couldn't be made another way.
Yeah, you know, there's a thing called information filtering, which is really lies at the heart of what has taken place in the educational system, in the university system, is that when this information, this anonymous information, when the other data comes in, say 20, 30, 40 years ago, and it gets set aside, it never makes the tech books. It never makes the journals. And if it doesn't make it then, it won't make it 10 years later. So we never get to see the other information. And this sort of established view of modern archaeology is really responsible for closing us off to the true history of the world, to the true interactions of other intelligences, to the ancient peoples. And they, you know, they're just sort of the old boys club, and they don't like anything new. They have a timeline, and it works for them. All their books are built on it. All the university's research is built on it. So it's this massive edifice that unfortunately is going to have to crumble, because the data that I've seen firsthand that relates to the pyramids, and I've climbed through them, I've climbed through all the chambers and the tombs, I've seen it firsthand, we're going to have to tear down the old paradigm. And this also relates to the UFO question. And everyone says how and why and when. The easiest answer is, and I tell this to people all the time, that a new paradigm happens, unfortunately, one funeral at a time. This old guard goes very slowly, and we're just going to have to wait out some of them until new blood comes in or events force their hand.
Well, that's the thing. We've got to have events to force their hand, and we're trying to do it right here with X Squared Radio. And my guest tonight is Rob Simone. We have one more hour with X Squared Radio. If you're station is only carrying part of it, make sure to get a hold of us. Give us those call letters. We'll take care of the rest. Don't go away. We'll be back in about 6 minutes with Rob Simone on X Squared Radio. Space shuttle fleet is very soon going to be retired. No other spacecraft in history has advanced the world more than this fleet. I wanted a way to keep that memory alive in my home, so I went to the space store and ordered a 25-inch model of the Space Orbiter. People who have seen it always comment on the incredible attention to detail in this model. If you know someone who loves this space program, and you want to get them a gift that they will never forget, you should visit the Space Store at X Squared Radio. People are always looking for something inexpensive and unique to give people they love. Well, now there is a way to give a gift that not only says how long you will love them, but it also allows you to help keep the planet green and growing. Tree Givers at X Squared Radio is the company that will plant a tree on public land somewhere in the 50 states and provide your special person with a beautiful certificate of that placement. This has become one of the most popular gift sites in the world. And because of their love for the earth, they are changing the world. So visit Tree Givers at X Squared Radio and see if you can find a gift for your special person. Brooks Agner here with X Squared Radio. If you like wildlife art and would love to add some of the most beautiful replicas to your home or office, you should visit Wildlife Gifts at X Squared Radio. They have everything from pandas to fish to eagles to horses in all sizes and price ranges. No matter what animal you love, they have the art for you. So visit Wildlife Gifts at X Squared Radio for that special someone today. You know we have revealed to you the ancient predictions that natural disasters are going to increase in power and frequency in these times. We might not always have the National Weather Service or the Emergency Broadcasting Service. So you might want to get your hands on some of the best weather reporting instruments around. Visit Wind and Weather at X Squared Radio and pick up something that might be useful. They also have the neatest gifts for your favorite people who like things for the outdoors or for their meditation garden. Check out Wind and Weather
at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Welcome back, Earth Explorers, to X Squared Radio. We're here bringing the past, the future. We're sorry if we go a little past your imagination, but that's all right. You're safe in here. My very excellent guest tonight with me is Rob Simone. I met him at the Conscious Life Expo Los Angeles recently. We hit it off right away. I knew he was an Earth Explorer the moment I met him, and we've got him here on the program tonight. In the news lately has been the story of a galactic wave that is about to reach Earth. Some say that it reached Earth in December and went around us or was redirected around us by an alien craft who stood in the way and created a power shield of some kind. We never knew it, and yet we have benefited from their work, it appears. Even more say that it is due to arrive on March 9th. Slam Day, they are calling it. The power of this wave is predicted by whistleblowers in the European Space Agency. It's said to be able to deliver 300-mile-an-hour winds, earthquakes, volcanoes, and even ocean upheavals. I know that emails have been circulating around the world called the Galactic Tsunami. Officials are publicly denying reports that they have been bouncing signals off of it for months. They have been privately moving assets, digging massive tunnels, and conducting maneuvers with troops and ships that are not strategic in nature. None of that has been admitted to. Now, we don't bring this news to you to be an alarmist, but to keep you informed with reports that are out there. You know, we constantly monitor the solar wind here at X Squared Radio. Each week we report the wind, sunspots, and even the geomagnetic activity here on Earth. Right now, there are no signs that I know of that this is anything more than a prank by someone claiming to work for the European Space Agency. I checked it out this last week for you and could find no supporting evidence whatsoever. In fact, when I found out the methodology by which this galactic wave was supposedly discovered by bouncing waves off of it, I did some investigation and found out we just don't have waves that are any faster than the speed of light, just the way we expected. Unfortunately for the person circulating this email, he may not know that gravity travels at least 20,000 times the speed of light. Not very likely that we're going to be able to measure something of that magnitude with a speed of light signal. Also, the response we have had about the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition has been nothing short of overwhelming. I had no idea so many of you out there have had strong feelings about the possibility. I wish I could take you all there. And in a sense, we are going to take you all. Our first calculations are that there will be some 3,000 hours of video and film taken during the upcoming expedition. The very best of that will be digested and directed into at least one feature-length documentary and will be shared with everyone who wants to see it. We don't know if the cable channels will grant us a single minute of airtime for it, but if that is the case, then we will tour the country with it and show it to everyone. We will offer it in DVD form as well. so as many people can learn about this as possible. If we raise enough money and the conditions of space and Earth allow it, we'll do it again next year and try to make even more of you able to go. We may be opening a window predicted to come forth for thousands of years by numerous civilizations, not the least of which were biblical and modern prophets. We have a 20-minute introductory video, which is very good and is now for sale on the website at x2-radio.com. You'll have to go to the online store and you'll be able to purchase a 20-minute sample of what this is going to be like and learn a little bit about Hollow Earth Theory while you're at it. And we'll be launching a brand new online store engine this weekend. You'll be able to negotiate it a little bit better. One more thing, you know, our friends down at Phoenix Science Foundation are also involved in bringing new energy devices to the consumer level. We recently met with some community officials in eastern Kentucky. Those things look very good. We surveyed a manufacturing facility and the possibility of beginning operations there with real labor and real parts and real technology, and we will do our best to bring this technology to the consumer level. Now, there are organizations out there whose purpose is to monopolize the energy market, even the new energy market. We don't believe in that. We don't have enough time for that. If you feel you would like to help in any way, you can always reach us at phoenixsciencefoundation.org. The more you do, the sooner you will see clean, renewable energy at your local town and supply store. I also want to make sure that you know you can call in this final hour from anywhere in the United States, toll-free, 877-876-5227. Anywhere toll-free in Canada, 888-810-8322. And anywhere else on the planet, Europe, New Zealand, Australia, on planet, off planet, from inside the planet, if you can reach a tower, you can find this number, 530-876-3222. Make sure to call in this hour because our guest is Rob Simone. In the last hour, we opened the subject of Fast Walkers. The trailer can be seen at fastwalkers.com. It's very fascinating. Every single person that's in this movie as an interviewee has a 1 to 2 minute sample on that website. It'll take you a while to go through all of them. A lot of these guests have been on X Squared Radio. We'll do our best to try to get them all to come on here. It seems we have gone through different periods in UFO films. First we had E.T. and Close Encounters. Then we had Independence Day and Fire in the Sky, and then the Taken series on Sci-Fi. Rob, where are we headed with this film?
Well, this DVD, I think, takes a look very well at this issue from different perspectives. We have, nuclear physicists on there. We have PhDs. We have political activists. I'm on there talking about the extra-dimensional components of these realities. Also, we have airline pilot who talks about the secrecy that's sort of imposed on commercial airliner pilots because they see things all the time, along with military aviators, but they dare not speak about it because it causes them nothing but trouble. So we're seeing time and time again that this issue has just been very well thrown into the ghetto. And it is something that has been put in a certain play, in a certain kind of light that makes it unfavorable for people who are trying to maintain a mainstream image. And that's done very well to slow it down and set it back. But what we're seeing here with this film, Fast Walkers, is a kind of a step forward. We have Monsignor Balducci on this film, a very high-ranking official from the Vatican. We have incredible new footage. We have quite a bit that I think clearly defines this for what it is, and also helps to sort of locate the edges of this phenomenon, hearing from all the different, over 30 different experts and their very varied backgrounds. So, it is really... In fact, I got some news. I just came back from the Laughlin conference, and this DVD won 2 EBE awards. It won
EBE.
These are the... They have a film festival there, and the film festival awards are called EBE awards. And Fast Walkers walked away with 2 of them. One for the best, I think it was animation, and the other one was for the sort of People's Choice Award, which won by a landslide. So it is already beginning to win awards.
Well, we had Dr. Greer's remarkable disclosure project break new ground, literally just broke new ground in May of 2001. My jaw was on the floor when I watched that thing. Then we had Virtual Silence. How hard was it to get Fast Walkers filmed?
Well, I think we're seeing this done more easy because, you know, with the advent of very professional cameras becoming less expensive and the availability of these speakers, it is something that we're going to be seeing more and more of. I recently came back from Hawaii where I shot a documentary and was able to take very good cameras over very difficult ground to get some extraordinary images, and I know I'm not alone in this pursuit. So we're seeing this, it's exploding. You know, these independent productions are absolutely exploding.
Well, you know, you have an open invitation to come on the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. We do have a firm date, but I'm not going to give it out on the air. I'll give it to you off the air, but it's in late fall.
Okay.
If you're available.
Yeah.
And you know, we're planning this expedition, you know, to the North Pole, and it's going to be cold, and it's not going to be easy. But we are going to have 24-hour-a-day UFO watch team on the ship. We will be in a place where no one else is watching.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be no radar. There'll be no military bases. We intend, as part of this experiment, to raise the consciousness of the ship to a level only seen at the end of workshops on the subject, and then wait for our response. How important do you feel it is to be in the proper mindset to receive this contact?
Well, that is something that I talk about in great detail. And I have to tell you, a week and a half ago, I was talking with some people who are in touch with the Native American community out in the Southwest, and we are in the final stages of making the preparations for a conference that is going to do exactly that. It's going to be the sort of conference, it's more of a ceremony, where we are going to be active participants in this sort of communication exchange. And yes, what that requires is creating the atmosphere that lends itself to this type of sort of morphogenic reality. Now, the other thing that I talk about in this context is this open perspective. If you are a very open person and have really accepted this larger reality into your life, you will have a completely different experience than, say, your neighbor who lives only 30 feet away. You could be seeing things and photographing things and experiencing things, and if your neighbor is very closed-minded, he or she will probably live just an ordinary life. Now, think about what that would mean if an entire civilization was open to this phenomenon of these stars being inhabited with intelligences, with our own Earth being inhabited with intelligences. The civilization will have a completely different experience than another. And we have seen this play out time and time again. You only have to look at the ancient builders of Machu Picchu. You only have to look at Sumeria, who were able to notate with exacting accuracy all of the planets in the solar system. You only have to look to the Mayans, who built this incredibly accurate calendar, and even were aware of Pluto hundreds of years before it was officially discovered. You only have to look to the Egyptians, who are capable of building monolithic structures that we cannot reproduce today. So it begins with the mindset.
Well, you said that this Native American ceremony is going to be done.
I
don't know if there are invitations left for that, but I'd very much like to attend myself. And just
I can talk to you off the air, and we can go into that a little bit more about what we're doing, and we're not sure how we're going to make this available to the public, but we are going to do it on some limited fashion. So, again, more information as that develops.
Yeah, that's fine. Invitation only. I think we have a caller on the line. Caller, can you give us your first name and where you're calling from?
Yes, this is BJ from Austin, Texas.
Hey, BJ. Welcome to the program. And Rob,
hey, Brooke, how you doing?
How are you?
I'm great. Hey, Rob, how you doing, man?
Very good. Very good. Thanks.
Good. I saw you actually on Sunday morning at the expo, and it was great seeing you. Great stuff. I love it.
Oh, right. Yes. It was an extraordinary time out there. Yep.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I was just going to say thank you for everything, and I've watched Fast Walkers. I'm spreading the word as much as I can, and I follow Greer's Disclosure Project pretty closely myself, and he was saying something about having a G7 country teaming up with him somewhat soon with the Disclosure Project team, and just wanted to see your thoughts on that, and I don't know, just wanted to say thanks and hi and everything.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you again. There are other countries that are more open to this phenomenon. Many people, in fact, this came up at one of the panels that I was on recently. Why is Mexico having all these incredible sightings? And I said to them, well, you know, the Mexican people are an incredibly open and intelligent people. So their collective mindset is perhaps in a more open and more higher frequency. So I think that they as a people invite those experiences in more. That's why, and that feeds upon itself. It's a snowballing effect. They're already open to this phenomenon. These things... as back as 10 years start to happen, they're excited by it, they embrace it, everyone runs out and gets cameras, more sightings happen, they're filmed, they're shown to even more of the country on Telemundo and all the other stations, even more excitement and acceptance is generated, and now they're having astonishing sightings. So it can really have a snowball effect. And when it comes to a country that is going to participate in some sort of established protocol, I'm under the impression that it's already happened. What I think we will be seeing is more like a flag-raising event where they're simply going to do it with people watching. They're going to do it in a more formal way, which of course is good. But I think, you know, there has been all sorts of level of contact that have been going on behind the scenes in many, many countries.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And by the way, Fast Walkers is also available on Amazon. If you just type in UFO DVD, you'll be able to get right to it.
Great. Thank you. And thank you, Brooke. I appreciate it.
Yeah, hey, no problem. Thanks for your support, BJ. And, you know, that word of mouth out there about Fast Walkers, that does more to boost sales than people might think. And we appreciate it. We appreciate your help with X Squared Radio as well.
Absolutely.
You mentioned something, Rob, about higher frequency, this higher consciousness we talk about from time to time on this program, and it gets a lot of press in the paranormal world. But for those who maybe are first time listeners to X Squared Radio, or they're picking it up while they're working on their computers in the archives during the week, they may not understand what we mean by higher frequency. What does that mean, actually? How do you raise a human being to a higher frequency?
Yeah, I know. It's one of those sort of expressions that get tossed around. And I think a lot of people can understand it in a very sort of intuitive sense. In other words, if you are, say, you know, out at a bar and you know, hanging out with your friends and telling dirty jokes, that might not be the same frequency that you would be at, say, if you were in church, surrounded by the community. You know, you're at a different level of mind. And what people have to realize is that there is a field of energy that is created by you. And it's created by your mind. This field of consciousness permeates beyond your physical form. And we know this to be true because I'm sure people have experiences where they've met people and their insides just sort of spin, or you connect with someone in a very meaningful way. You can literally jump outside of your body when you're activated. And if you get people together who are sharing the same level, it reinforces that field and makes it that much more strong. We've seen this, you know, there are rock concerts, you know, any kind of music, drum circles, any kind of religious surface, sporting events. You all have shared in this, either knowingly or unknowingly. So what this means is that if you are mindful of your thoughts, because they carry great energy, and you put them in a place of a very careful, a very considered place, and you open up yourself and you center yourself, then you are at a different state from where you would be, say, if you're kicking back in your couch eating Doritos and watching The Simpsons. And that is a tangible, measurable difference. Now, when it comes to the human field of mind interacting with other humans and the larger field of mind, we know that this is another tangible effect, and it's a very powerful effect, and it might be, I think it's very noticeable to other intelligence that are interacting with humans. There was a great experiment done by the Institute of Noetic Sciences using random number generators that they have right now at this very moment and have had for the past 7 years, located at different parts of the Earth. What they noticed was that these random number generators would start to form patterns when there were significant world events that would make headlines around the world and unify people in their thoughts about the same thing at the same time. When 9/11 happened, these random number generators all started to line up. And we also know that the human mind can affect these random number generators because they've done many experiments where people would sit down and try to affect them, and they would be successful. Not only that, but they, without the person's knowing it, would put a delay on these number generators, and they found that people were also affecting the numbers, but since it was on delay, they were affecting it in a different time, which also, you know, goes into remote viewing, which is a science that's getting more and more credibility, and it goes back to the ancient shamans who were also responsible for peering in to this unknown world, altering their consciousness, altering their vibratory frequency so that they could access different planes of awareness. And that might sound a little New Agey, but believe me, it is a tradition that is written into almost every indigenous culture.
Well, it's also written into Christianity because
absolutely.
Just look as far as Matthew chapter 5, and it talks about that you are the light of the world, that your light, let your light so shine, what man would hide his light under a bushel. And then again in chapter 6, it talks about the light of energy in the human eye and the fact that we can darken our own energy flow. So this is something that, you know, we talked earlier in the last hour about the possibility that Jesus Christ had traveled to the East and had learned from, you know, many ascended masters. And then when he returned to the Jerusalem area around age 29 and began his mission, he brought a lot of these very ancient teachings with him and brought them up to current culture and taught them to the people. And he taught us how to live.
Yeah, it's also thought that he talked about reincarnation. A lot of the stuff that he might have been saying could have been edited out. But you're absolutely right. What I was saying about these different accessing different levels of consciousness, both in the shamanic tradition, are also going on today and for the past 1,000 years, but go under different names. I mean, look at the Catholic religion. They have stigmata. They have saints doing miracles. In fact, you can't even be a saint unless you did a miracle. And I've traced back most of the saints that are already canonized within the Catholic religion, and their miracles are extraordinary. They were flying, they were levitating, they were healing people with their perspiration. I mean, we also, you know, about deja vu and all these things that we accept. We have different names for them, but make no mistake about it. It's about accessing different levels of awareness through intentional focusing and the shifting of our conscious state, which also might be described as changing our frequency.
Yeah, exactly. And it's said also very clearly in the scriptures that when miracles stop happening, it's because the people have lost their faith. They have lost that higher frequency. And it says that the higher frequency precedes the miracle. Miracles do not happen for missionary work. They happen as a result of the higher frequency and intention and consciousness of the people.
Mm-hmm. In fact, Christ would teach his disciples how to pray. And there is a story in a, you know, being a world explorer, you also have to be a biblical scholar. There's a passage in the New Testament where Christ, on his way to the temple, where he throws out the money lenders, changers, he kills a fig tree.
Right.
Yeah, because it had no fruit. Interesting enough, looking at that and talking with other scholars as I do about these things, it wasn't even the right season for this thing to bear fruit. But he brought down his wrath upon it, and they said that it died, you know, very quickly. But the point of this was that he told his disciples that, you know, you can do what I can do. You can do the same things that I can do and even more. The powers that I have of healing, the powers that I have of taking bad spirits out of people like Jesus did and putting them over pigs into pigs and having the pigs run up the side of a cliff. That's also another story in the New Testament, believe it or not. He said, you can do all that and more. In fact, he said, once you learn how to pray and know how to do it correctly, you can make mountains tumble into the sea. That's a very significant statement. Because
he had an argument as the Pharisees kept continually drawing him out and trying to trip him up on little points of law, because basically they were lawyers, and the Sadducees and the secret organization, the Sanhedrin, all the time trying to take this guy down because he was harsh in their gig. I mean, he was really, you know, making the people more powerful than the leaders of the church. But he finally turns to them in John 10:34, and he recites a scripture to them out of Psalms. He says, look, is it not written, I said ye are gods, whom the scriptures are given? I mean, come on. He was trying to explain to them that each one of us have godhood inside of us, if we will just accept it and run with it and glorify it.
Yeah. Yeah, we really do have extraordinary potential. And an underlying theme of everything that I talk about really comes down to that and touches upon that, because it's a testimony to, the human spirit and this incredible inert abilities that we have to really utilize them. I think, you know, with the Earth moving into a denser part of the universe, as we come to the completion of one of the great cycles of the Mayan calendar, we're going to see these dormant energy systems being reactivated because we're entering into more our energetic part of our galaxy. So there is a lot to be said for a sort of a grand awakening happening.
Well, you think that the increased UFO activity, the increased ET interaction with Earth dwellers, and by ET I don't mean just extraterrestrial off-world, I mean maybe extraterrestrial even inner world, there's an interaction going on. It appears to be increasing in frequency, intensity, meaningfulness, and we're going to try and draw it out on purpose. We're going to try and do things in the next year that are going to make global contact happen in a big, big way. Do you think that these ETs are aware of our potential and our great desire to join the galactic community?
Yeah, I do, and that's why I am so excited about this journey that you are taking, and I fully intend on doing everything I can to join this, because it is not only something that I think that they are aware of, but it is vital that we do it. Because if we continue in carrying on and just being sort of bounced around by current events, it's simply not going to make as much difference as if we take concerted efforts and steps to reach out and to tap in to this sort of enormous potential of energy and ability that we have in all of us. We have to really step forward and say, look, we are shining our light. We are stepping forward with a purity of thought and a commonality of intention. And that creates a spike in awareness. And what that does is sort of bring these things closer. And it brings humanity closer. It has sort of a collective effect where, oh, okay, well, we're seeing people step forward because there's just too much of this that I think is controlled by the military complex, the industrial military complex. They have been sort of exploring. They have been trying to utilize any type of esoteric potential for their own purposes. We've saw the Nazis do it. The use of the occult, the use of the sacred for material gains is well established. So we have to start putting on the record experiences and different sort of attempts to use our sort of abilities to further a peaceful contact. And I think that will speak volumes to these intelligences that are aware of us and have not seen as much of that in the past.
So you believe that there is a cross-national global conglomerate that is involved with ET research. It's actually above the governments.
Well, there is a level of classification that is higher than the president's because I think the way they look at it is, well, the president's only going to be in office for 4 years. Why should we tell him about all the stuff that we have? We've also seen that there is an extraordinary amount of money that simply goes missing from the Department of Defense budget every year. It's trillions of dollars. So we know that they're well-funded. There's no paper trail. There's no congressional oversight. And we have also seen, on top of that, presidents trying to get answers, and they are simply turned away. Case in point is Jimmy Carter, who had a UFO sighting himself while he, I believe, was governor in the company of 20 people. They saw this thing. He went on the record. We have his form. We have his report that he made out. And when in office, actually on his campaign trail, he promised to try and open up information about UFOs. When he was president, he tried to access information. He was refused. Now, the reason I know that is because I know Shirley MacLaine. I sat down with her at her house, and she told me face-to-face that she was friends, and still, you know, still is, with Jimmy Carter. And he used to call her up on the phone and say, I've tried to get this information, to get access to it. They simply have refused me at every turn. And he was very frustrated.
It's the bureaucrats that are refusing it.
And too, He sent Hubble out to get information, believe it or not, on UFOs and who killed JFK, and he was refused. So yeah, wow. there is another level that's operating. It is the same complex. It is the same organization that Eisenhower warned us about in his last speech in office, about the unwarranted power that is the military-industrial complex. And now there's an updated term, by the way. I call it now, what is it now, the military-industrial pharmaceutical newstainment complex. Because what we've seen, and this is no conspiracy theory, is more and more of the world's power falling into fewer and fewer hands. We've seen R.J.R. Reynolds and Nabisco, major multinational conglomerates, being sued by the European Union for laundering money. They're connected with laundering money for Russian mafia, for Saddam Hussein when he was alive, and these other sort of notorious entities. So we're seeing this collusion by the global banking system and it's all of its secrecy that's tied in to the heroin poppies that are now growing better than ever before in Afghanistan, the pharmaceutical empire, the petrochemical empire, and ultimately tied into this UFO reality in some way, shape, or form, because the technology that these things run on would threaten their stronghold on the energy monopoly.
Well, that's very curious to me because my friends down at the Phoenix Science Foundation are actively trying to bring new energy products into manufacturing and do it on a fast-track way using APQP systems, which have been used in the automotive industry for 25 years, these advanced product quality planning systems. And these are designed to bring paper ideas into full-scale, flaw, error-free, variation-free manufacturing in lightning speed, less than a year. We have the technology out there. We're working with the top 100 technologies in the world. Phoenix Science Foundation is working with three of the top 100 in particular. And we want to bring this stuff to full manufacturing. We really haven't found any opposition, but we certainly haven't found much funding. We have found some small communities that are willing to work with us with grants and tax rebates and things like that. But these things very soon are going to be shipped all over the world, and they're going to take lots and lots of people, hopefully tens of thousands of them a month, off-grid. Yeah, so it won't take long for this to proliferate. My question is, why are trillions of dollars being spent trying to reverse engineer UFO technology? What is the purpose? Are we as a world trying to master interplanetary travel, or are we trying to bring into submission all the peoples of the world? For what end? If they're stupid and they're not enlightened, what good are the masses?
Well, there are, of course, different schools of thought when it comes to this question of back engineering the alien technology. There are reports of the Nazis being in touch with some sort of ET race. There are incredible series of pictures about with Nazi UFOs. There's Roswell. There's Colonel Corso saying that night vision fiber optics and other things are a product of the crash at Roswell. We have seen incredible leaps in technology. We can say, though, that it's still unclear. I've heard from other people who say that the technology that these ETUs are so far advanced than ours that we couldn't hope to glean anything useful from it. So it's kind of it's a very gray area, but I think that just putting your mind out there and realizing that there has been some sort of contact ultimately would have led to some sort of push in technology that the government obviously would have had complete control of. And the secrecy that surrounded the first major crash at Roswell, because it was during the Cold War, that mentality overtook that event. And I think that mentality still lingers over anything advanced, over anything extraterrestrial. I think that lingering Cold War mentality still negatively affects the decisions and the policies that surround any involvement that our government or other governments might have in relation to ET technology.
Well, yeah, it seems that the government is the fast response team, that they're out there, they, as you said, sanitize the area, gather up all the information and haul it back to warehouses so that metals and circuitry and even biologies can be understood. And I think it's pretty common knowledge that the government, or if it's not the government, then it's some kind of hyper-government, some over-government, some bureaucratic, unelected, perpetual government that is a fabric that weaves in and out of all major governments in the world, so that they sort of move their billions together into a common goal. That goal is a little elusive. We can't figure it out. But the general public is pretty confident that they're withholding something from us. I guess my big question is the world ready for the truth? Is the world ready for real disclosure?
Well, I would say this, that after traveling around for as many years as I have, the rest of the world is more ready than we are, simply because if you, as a people, are tied into a Judeo-Christian notion of the world, and let's face it, some people in this country are still going along with intelligent design, and the world is only a few thousand years old, it's very hard for you then to adopt this larger reality. But every Hindu that I spoke to is open to this idea. Every Muslim, the Latin American community is very well ready for this idea. So yeah, most of the world is. England, America, and some other countries are just, basically the Western world are just a little bit behind everybody else when it comes to their readiness and their possibility of extrasolar life. Absolutely.
Do you think that this extra governmental body, this above government group, this I guess Greer calls it a rogue government, do you think they have an operational craft that can do pretty much the same thing we associate with UFOs?
Well, I, working at CAUSE, working for this civil activist organization back in the 90s, we got a chance to talk to some pretty high military officials that were giving us information but did not want to go on the record at the time. And I remember one Air Force colonel talking to me about this very same issue, and he said that these black triangles that we were going after the DOD for, he said some of them are ours and some of them aren't. And the ones that were ours, I don't think I've ever said this before in an interview, but these black triangles, make up a very significant part of recent UFO activity. We have the Belgian Wave back some 10 years ago. We have the Phoenix Lights, which is another big black triangle. Art Bell and his wife saw a black triangle. Many people see these things floating, silently. And have made, and even gave us affidavits testifying to their experiences. So these black triangles that this colonel was telling me about are actually floating radar platforms using some sort of ionic propulsion system, some sort of anti-grav system that allows it to fly very low. It's very stealthy. And what it does is provide a super or hyper-accurate model of the area surrounding it, which is incredibly useful in a theater of war because it can tell them where enemy troops are, where enemy installations are, and it can also give them this hyper-accurate map so that their missiles or their fighter jets can cling very close to the ground to avoid the enemy's radar. Now, why these things have been seen over cities and over populated areas is still a mystery.
You still have the story of the Rendlesheim Forest where a black triangle was found, and it was right in between two military installations.
Yeah, well, that was a little different because that one was very small, very low, and there was an extraordinary contact event that happened there. But it defies any logic that the military or this cabal that has access to these types of aircraft would fly them over populated areas. Now, they could be difficulties in operating these very advanced, technologically advanced craft, or these triangles could indeed be operated by someone else not from this planet. But we have seen a commonality in this type of craft. So, some of them are ours and some of them aren't.
So the commonality is that they look the same, or they have the same kind of lights on them, or same kind of behavior?
Well, absolutely. In this lawsuit that we put together, we were going after specific performance characteristics. And some of those were that it was black, it had lights on the leading edge, it made no noise. It floated and moved at a very slow, constant rate. So, yeah, in its characteristics of flight, there is extraordinary commonality. And I've heard it from people in different countries and all over the U.S. Reporting the exact type of sighting.
Oh, yeah, I always wonder, even in North Carolina, these black triangles, actually there are two different sightings that we have in western North Carolina. One is a craft about 100 feet long,
yeah.
And the other is a craft about 600 feet long. Now, something that big, two football fields long, flying just above the trees, of course, it's only spotted by the locals that it flies over, and they just ring the heck out of that 911 number.
Yep,
but they don't appear to go really fast or get away. They just like a helicopter when they fly overhead. They're there and then they're gone, and then you don't know where they've gone unless you can get up in the air and follow them. But you're saying from up above, once they launch military helicopters, they can't follow these things?
Well, it's unclear what they do and how they do it. But I've never heard one of these things being followed back to wherever it came from. And, you know, we've also heard of other stories of these things sort of coming and going at will. So it's hard to say, you know, what exactly is an extraterrestrial craft or a very advanced military platform being operated in some way, shape, or form.
Well, I was talking to Jose Escamilla about that very subject, and he said that it appears that the real UFOs, the ones that are way up in the sky that you see above your head, they sort of blink out of existence. They don't shoot off at like 10,000 miles an hour. They just kind of phase out and go away. And he has mastered this parallel photography method where he takes visual and IR film side by side with the same cameras taped together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so wild to see the split screen that you look in the visible screen and it looks like just plain old blue sky. And in the same screen with the same clouds, but it's shot in ultraviolet or in IR, there's the craft sitting there. It's so amazing.
Yeah. We also have to remember that if an ET can travel hundreds, thousands of light years, they are probably operating in more dimensions than we are. So this extra-dimensional quality and ability would give them extraordinary capabilities that we would perhaps only be able to describe as magic. You know, just sort of blinking in and out and all the other sort of paranormal phenomenon that we relate to ETs can be very well explained by understanding the effects of extra-dimensional capability.
Yeah, in other words, bottom line is they're seen only when they want to be seen.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, if you operate in more dimensions than someone, you are able to blink in and out of their reality. For instance, if there were two fish in a very, very shallow pond, they would only be able to go left and right. It's too shallow to go low, and above them is just the surface of the water. So they're operating, for all intents and purposes, in two dimensions, left and right. They have one plane. But I operate in three dimensions, so I'm able to come to this little pond and grab one of them and take them out of the water. Now, his buddy would probably be thinking, well, where did Larry go? Because he would have no concept of up or down or below him or what's
right.
going on in three dimensions. So to him...
Larry just blinked out of existence.
Exactly. Larry just disappeared. And he would be under the same sort of conflicted logistical conundrum that we find ourselves when we try to contemplate the workings of these extraterrestrials as it relates to abductees and then and the workings of the UFOs. So the UFOs operate, say, in multiple dimensions, and they're able to do extraordinary things. And it is something that is reflected in art, because when you go beyond the workings of the rational mind, that's when you enter into poetry. That's when you enter into art, because it's able to touch, you know, areas of sublime experience that mere words and mere logic simply can't. Take, for example, the works of Picasso, when his famous paintings of the eyes and the nose sort of showing different perspectives at the same time. That's exactly what an ET operating in multiple dimensions would see. They wouldn't just see us at one angle. They would see the whole room. They would see every angle of us at the same time. So what we see in some of Picasso's work is kind of a visual representation of the experience of an extra-dimensional being.
Yeah, the whole idea of cubism was the introduction of the fourth dimension into two-dimensional art. And that's why it looks so strange for someone, you know, standing in a gallery looking at a woman with both eyes on the same side of her face.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Listen, my guest tonight has been Rob Simone. I can't believe 2 hours have gone by already.
That was quick.
You have your own talk radio program in Los Angeles, do you not?
Yeah, I produce a show out of L.A., where I live, but it airs on an FM station in London, England, because I used to live in London, and I like it so much, they asked me to keep doing this sort of two-hour show every week, and it's been a lot of fun. I've talked to the most interesting people on the planet.
Well, maybe I'm interesting enough to get on your program. I don't know.
Well, I think we already have a date lined up for you, Brooks. You're definitely on the list.
Excellent, excellent. I want to be, absolutely.
Sure.
FM, what station in Los Angeles?
No, it's a London station in London, England.
Oh, I see,
yeah.
So you broadcast all the way to there.
Yeah, absolutely. I produce the show from Los Angeles, where I live, and it airs on an FM station in London, and, of course, worldwide on the Internet, and I've been doing that for about 4 years. Because there's really nothing like this show, you know, like your show and my show. There's nothing like it in England. They have a very controlled media there. So I'm one of the few people that has this sort of full-length two-hour show where we get into very much the same things that you do on yours, Brooks.
I was going to ask you how well-received it is. I know the friends that I have in Wales who have been emailing me on a regular basis, they say that in my time slot, which I think is early Monday morning, I think is when it airs there, that I'm number one. So I'm very flattered by that. How hard was it to get started in London with the
well yeah I genre? So I used to have a radio show in Australia where I lived. I had another one in Nepal, Kathmandu, where I spent a great deal of time, believe it or not. And when I finally made it to London, I just started working at the station that was brand new. It was relatively easy, and so I've just been on the air there I lived there for a year back in 2003, and it was the highest-rated show, and still is, on the station. So they just let me. I said, look, I'm moving back to America. And they said, well, you know, you can still produce it. So we just pre-record it here in Los Angeles and just send it off every week.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I've only been doing this now 17 months. My good friend
Don Newsom talked me into coming on BBS Radio. I went on for 1 hour on Wednesday nights about a year and a half ago, and it took off. And then it went to three-hour format on Sunday evenings, and the rest is history. Out of all the hosts on X Squared Radio, I'm the only one with a three-hour format. Honestly, I don't know how he puts up with me, but the show continues to grow, and we continue to try to get the best guests out there, and certainly now you're one of them.
That's what I do. I try to get the information out. It all comes out of the website. You know, we put a ton of links on there, sort of alternative information. We have a special service on our website that comes directly from Reuters, this global news agency. And anytime they get a story that's a little unusual or a little paranormal, they send it directly to our website. And there, you know, gets disseminated to anyone who wants to take a look. You know, just kind of keeping up with alternative information, because we can't trust our established media to inform us.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we know from Men in Black that all the good news is in National Enquirer and Star and all that. Yeah, there are alternative sources.
Yeah.
Well, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the program, Rob Simone. His website is robsimone.com. Check it out. Check out the new movie Fast Walkers. Make sure to go to his website and pick that up. If you can't, don't want to buy it there, go to Amazon and buy it.
Sure.
And it's destined to be, I don't know if they have a New York Times bestsellers list for DVDs, but it's definitely destined to be one of those. Are we going to see it in theaters?
Well, I think that they are talking about some sort of theatrical release, but I would think that it would be more likely that it's just going to remain in DVD form, and it's going to be just available for people who want to buy it.
Well, I will send you my contacts down at Screen Addictions. They control a couple thousand screens. We'll see if we can get that out there. They're very talented. Good friend Tanya Maidenfort will take care of you guys.
Okay.
All right, my friend. I'll let you get back to your life in Los Angeles, and we here deep beneath the earth in Kentucky will get back to ours. Thank you so much for being on X Squared Radio.
Thanks, Brooks. It was an absolute pleasure.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
All right, my dear Earth Explorers, your letters are so moving. For the first time since I started this program, I have not been able to keep up with reading them. They are so numerous. Just keep them coming, and we'll keep trying to keep the best content coming to you. And I will play my exit. Thank you so much. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.